The best tea in the city.
I'm drinking tea in the studio. Yeah? For the first time, if you're watching on Kaya TV, hello, cheers to you. I've got tea on my table. Why? Because Ms. Vogue is here. Manyana, dumela.
Dumela, ntate.
Okay.
Keteng.
Ha o motle.
Yo. Kalebo.
And to hear that Thando is a prosecutor.
Was a prosecutor.
What do you mean was? Have you let go of that world completely?
Yo, actually, I think I left in 2016. I took my sabbatical, which turned into a very long sabbatical.
Yeah.
But yes, I was a prosecutor for 4 years.
Where?
I was working for the National Prosecuting Authority, go Bayibitha Westgate Court.
Okay.
That was the very popular court, Johannesburg Match Court, JP Magistrate Court.
Yeah.
And then I went back to Westgate to specialize in sexual offense cases.
Oh, my word.
I know, it's quite a journey.
And do we know any of the famous cases that you've dealt with?
I think I did it for 2 years, sexual offenses, so I was not really kind of at advocate level, Wokherinel type. No.
Oh my word. So now you went into law.
Yes.
Was that always the plan? Was that always the passion?
So my father actually wanted me to be an accountant.
Oh.
And I wanted to be an actress. So we had a difference in philosophy and we both agreed on law.
Oh, okay.
And that's actually how I went into the law degree. But when I went into prosecuting, I had started doing community-centered law.
Yes.
It's a thing called street law, Koskolong, Govets.
Yeah.
And then I decided I want to do community-centered law, and that's how I went into prosecuting.
So you studied this at Wits?
Yes.
Take me back to Lens. But I'm told there was a life before Lenasia, right?
No, well, I was very small before Lenasia. I can't really remember much of that life. Yeah.
Okay, take me to Lens.
To Lens. Okay, so I grew up in Lens for most of my life, and it was quite a mixed community.
Yeah.
So it was Indian, Black, Coloured. So we never go by Ninja Gofel, and that's where I kind of started most of my childhood.
Yeah. Mm. And here you are in a mixed environment, but you still felt different.
I was the only not pigmented person there. because, yeah. You know, it was like an Indian community, Black community, but everywhere I went,
yes.
I was the only one who looked the way I did, you know.
Yes,
I even
yes.
looked different from my parents, really.
Yeah.
But I think nako kele munyane nexayibona into, and I never really saw difference until you kind of start going to school or other places where people are like, wait a minute, you're different, and you're like, wait a minute, I am. You didn't know all this time. Because I remember the first time I went to school, it was such a strange thing, because I'm home. When I was at home, I was this princess, and
sure,
you know,
sure.
How fitla goes go long, and then they're like, no, but you are this, you know, when people start calling you names and stuff like that, you're like,
you're giving this labels.
Exactly.
And when you get back home.
You know, I think I remember, because when I went to school my first time, I actually was wearing my mother didn't put school uniform on me, Olankenya, a blue polka dot dress.
Okay.
So when I got treated differently koskolong by the other kids, I thought it was because of the dress. So I went to her demanding the school uniform, and she was just like, oh, and then... You know,
yeah.
But I didn't see myself as different, so I thought it was the dress that was a problem.
Yes.
And eventually, I got back and I got the school uniform and everything, and still there was a funniness, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't really open up to my parents until much later. There's this problem because I didn't understand what was happening.
Yeah, couldn't they sense?
You know,
when you were home.
You know, I think my mother was just trying to do is she was trying to do her part in saying, we love you, you are enough. But she was like, I'm gonna let you figure this out. And I think it was probably a very difficult decision for her.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Because my mother never sat me down and said, you have albinism.
Yeah.
You know,
she never
did that.
Yeah.
She just tried to normalize my life as much as possible.
Yeah.
And whenever I went back to her, there was this time Nako, this other woman just freaked out when I was on my way back to school. And she was just like, yo, man, don't get that. And I think I was about 10 years old.
What?
And it took a long time for me.
Where was this happening? In a taxi way?
No, neketsako skolong. And I used to walk to school. I was working with my friend.
Yeah.
I used to walk to school because Gohai was so close by. So when this happened, I remember just, I didn't, because when she started freaking out, the last person I thought that this was directed to
is you.
Was me.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's like, shave me, Laura, what's going
what the,
on?
Yeah, yeah.
But when this happened, I didn't tell my mother. I think it took maybe 2 years or so before Kirotsa Mewak. And my mother was quite hurt that I didn't tell her, but it's that I had to process what was going on. I really didn't understand what was going on. So, yeah.
Metric dance? Oh, yeah. We're going there.
So, matric dance, my mother made me look like a complete princess. Hey, like, she made me dress up in the most, yo, I know, Nikela top shy, I have to say.
Yeah.
But I think also at that time, the understanding of attractiveness and myself was still growing.
Okay.
So the person I actually took to my matric dance was my cousin because I just didn't even want to...
Oh, you didn't even want to risk it.
I didn't want to risk it. So I took my cousin and he just, Afita, and he was a fashion designer, and I tell you, hey?
Yes.
Utlila apere eccentric.
Yeah.
It was very, very eccentric.
Yeah.
So yes, and that was my matric dance.
And when, let's go back to your unit. Mm. How many siblings?
Four.
And your number?
Three. Middle child. I have the syndrome. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So now, how are they perceiving what the world says about you? Because you know how we are as siblings.
Mm.
Don't touch my sister. Don't touch my blood.
My sisters especially, because my brother also has albinism. So I think I was me being in his life kind of helped him a little more, you know, because he didn't feel as alone, and
yes,
we could relate on a level that not everybody else could understand.
Okay.
But my sisters were fierce. My sisters were fierce. Like, my
both Sasha fierce themselves.
Yo, yay, like, hardcore, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
Especially, like, I mean, me and my, the sister who came getting number two.
Yes.
Yay, we fought all the time, but yeah, we really loved one another.
Of course.
My oldest sister, though, it was like she was my mini mother, because she took such good care of me.
Yeah, yeah.
But now our relationship as siblings was kind of just, we just loved one another.
Yeah.
But in terms of me getting bullied or whatever, I think also because there was such an age gap. I remember there was this time once when these kids, Batile, and they hit me with a ruler.
And they hit you with a ruler?
Yeah, this child, Lile, and it wasn't really, it was, I was dramatizing it. She came, yeah, she did hit me with the ruler, but yeah, now I went there and I was very dramatic because, yeah, I went crying and,
yeah,
I was so upset.
Yeah, yeah.
And my sister was like, oh, I want to be cheeky, but you know, Rona was sharp, I'm going to take a towel and try. They're like, no, someone could tell us taking towel and, you know, deal with them.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, but I think already, otherwise, like, Lo and Ajwale, to be honest, my sisters are like so much of my foundation. Yeah. I have a really wonderful family. It was one of the blessings in my life that I have never had to work for, thank goodness.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I'm hanging out with Thando Hopper, and you've seen on Vogue magazine, former prosecutor, poet, okay, model, you name it. We started up with Masigo, hanging out there with FKJ. Why that song?
Sure.
By the way, Arimutimi Tie Nwano Abad, okay? We say, na, obata something stronger than tea. So... we went to the MD's office to find something adultinyana. Kiss, can you bring that cup here? This is live TV.
Coffee is very adult.
Mm.
Yes.
No, we'll call it coffee. Let's call it coffee. Ne? So you still tell me about Masigo?
I love the vibe, man. More than anything, I don't have any other reason. I just love the vibe of that song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who else is in that mold for you? Because I'm sure there's a certain soundtrack that you're using, that you're playing, that is just maybe grabbing you, especially now.
Do you know, I think my music ranges. I have a very wide range of music.
Yeah.
But I think what he, that vibe, it kind of reminds me of sort of that old school type of soul, but it still has a youthfulness to it,
yeah?
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So because I'm kind of vacillating between old school and new school,
yeah.
I think they bring the combination quite nicely.
Oh, yeah.
And it was also like a planned thing, but also like a freestyle at the same time. It's just beautiful to watch.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
It is and it is not. You know what I mean? Yeah,
yes.
That's the world we live in right now.
In betweenness.
In betweenness. Time to hop on my top 10 at 10. Remember, we're on Kaya TV, so go out and check it out. But right now, let's take a break and we'll be right back with more about this woman's story and music. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
your
no.
list is blazing.
Thank you. It's only the second song.
So far, so good. So far, so good. We like it. I like what you said about how Mama Hopa, as much as that woman was screaming and what happened to you with the dress and so on, she said, no. I'd rather you figure it out yourself. I think it speaks to parental love, how hard it is to let your child face the cruel world. Because it is cruel, whether you are guarded or not, whether you are sheltered or not, life will still throw punches and you must roll with them. But as a parent, to stand back and let your child face it, it must be one of the most difficult things.
I think the thing is, it was sort of, it's a bit complicated,
yeah.
Because there were things I just never spoke to my parents about. Growing
Why,
up.
Why, are they old school?
Not at all. Actually, my parents are so liberal.
Exactly, so.
The thing, it was so liberal, but I think I didn't know how to process what was happening to me. But one thing I really appreciate my parents for is they knew when to step in. So if ever there was something that they knew, okay, this is beyond her, we need to step in, if it was school or whatever, because my mother's a warrior, you know, but she also knew when she needed to let me.
And daddy, being daddy's girl?
My father, you know, like, there was this time when I went to my dad and I think I was about 12 years old, and I said to him, I said, I don't want to look this way anymore. I don't want to be this way anymore. And I said, I'm not attractive. I don't like it. I'm not beautiful. And I'm crying. And my father just looks at me in complete shock. Because this is the thing, is my parents have always raised me as, you are smart, you are beautiful, you are capable.
Yes.
So now when you see this young woman who's crying and saying that she's not all of those things, you're like, who is this?
Yeah.
And my father looked at me and he said, I have never seen such a beautiful girl in my life. You are the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. Sure. And I was just like... But I think really at that time, I didn't even understand what he was giving me, you know, both my parents have affirmed my existence. They can't control what happens outside.
Oh, yeah.
But each time, you know, the thing is, we don't understand how many mentors we have in our lives, and our parents are actually our primary mentors because they're the ones who we speak to and we say, my mother has always been a perspective giver. So she would never give me the perspective that everybody else expects. If people were treating me in a particular way, she would always shift my perspective. And I think, yeah, no, I appreciate her for that.
Yeah. And daddy being there as they...
Rock.
A femme.
I know. My father, like, I think both my parents prayed, and I think probably that's the reason why even law, I could embed myself in something like law, because my mother was this creative person, perspective person, you know. And my father was just the logical, you know, you can do it, like, just have that faith in yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had both parents kind of come in, and the symbiosis was unbelievable.
Now, here you are. You have self-esteem issues, and your sister is this deputy mother.
Deputy mother, yes.
Deputy mother steps in.
That is the one.
And says, yes. You're going for modeling.
Yes.
And you were like, what?
But you see, this is the interesting thing. When I went for modeling, I had a lot of confidence, I thought. Because at the time I was a prosecutor, and it's about Nikrata, like, we Kenya, a whole lot of things.
Yeah.
And I only realized how much my self-esteem was injured when I started modeling.
Sure.
Because when I was a prosecutor, like Nikki Kenya, like I used to color my eyebrows and color my eyelashes. And when I did that, I even remember when I started doing that, I was in matric and I colored my eyebrows, colored my eyelashes. So I left home looking one way and I came back home looking very different from what my mother saw in the morning.
Yeah.
And I felt the pressure because, you know, having pale eyebrows and pale eyelashes is very different from everybody else in your community.
Oh, yeah.
Because usually people have darker eyebrows and darker eyelashes.
Yes.
And so I wanted to kind of, there was a time when I felt like I wanted to stop having albinism. You know, I was just
you wanted
I don't,
to fit in. Yeah.
You know, I was like, I don't want to look this different from everybody else. And my mother, when I came back, she was like, What happened?
Yeah.
Like, what did you do?
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because he was like, I had affirmed you so much, and now it was beginning to show her, no, mom, society is kicking in, you know?
Yes,
so but at this point, everybody comes back, and they say, you are beautiful. You look awesome. Oh, you know? So now I'm like, I got it.
Yeah,
I
finally.
Got that winning, yeah, you know, that winning formula. And now, really, I'm Miss Attractive now. I go to university. I'm the bomb. I'm a prosecutor. I'm the bomb. One day during a shoot, I remember they asked me, they said, okay, you know, what kind of look do you want? You know, do you want like the whole extended, you know, brows, all of that? Do you want a clean look? And I said, what's a clean look? And they said, no, just a clean look. Like you just, you know, you put on makeup, but it's bare minimum and you come out your authentic self.
Yeah.
And I was like, sorry, what?
Yeah.
And then I actually started realizing that here, when I started modeling, I said I want to represent albinism in a positive way.
Yeah.
But I was afraid of the way I looked.
Hmm.
And I started being like, but this is my hair. My hair is curly, blonde.
Sure.
My eyebrows are pale. My eyelashes are pale.
Yeah.
This deserves representation.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's when I started having more courage with respect to how I looked, even if it wasn't popular or it wasn't accepted in popular culture or celebrated in popular culture. Mm. And I also think another person who had a lot to do with that is my mother.
Yeah.
Because my mother was like, you know, I know you want to do all of this stuff, but the way you are, you look gorgeous just the way you are.
Oh, yeah.
And she constantly affirmed it. And I think, I don't know if I would have been as brave as I became going into the media industry, expecting me to look one way and looking different from that way, if I didn't have that parental support that says, you are enough, you are enough, you are enough. So, yeah.
I'm talking to Thando Hopper, if you just tuned in. First South African, first African woman living with albinism to be the cover of Vogue.
First woman with albinism to be on the cover of Vogue across races.
There you go. That call comes. Tell me about that.
So when we actually got the call, not even the call, the email, I told my sister first, and I was like, you know, we received this particular email and everything, and my sister was just, she was psyched.
Yeah.
My mother thought I was going to be trafficked. My mother was like, you know, you get these emails, people are targeting models.
Yes.
She's like,
it's a scam.
She was so terrified. And when we were doing our due diligence, my mother was just like, I don't think you should go, you know, like the
shit, so scared. Man.
And then I came back and I'm like, I'm not trafficked, you know. And
so
then we made history.
Where? So the shoot happened where?
It happened in Cape Town.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and actually we went landscape hopping.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't realize that Cape Town was that beautiful. You know, I keep going to Cape Town, but it's incredible about how we don't actually explore our own country.
We don't.
So when I saw, I was like, this is Cape Town? It has like...
Just like Joburg will also surprise you.
Yes. That's very true. Very true.
Because we don't know it. I think we do. We just don't know it.
It's so true. And even when I went there, I actually took some of, you know, the family jewelry that we had, because I am half Mosotho, half Maxhosa, and I wanted to bring in, you know, Southern Africa. Because the thing about it is that you know, representation is multifaceted. Yes. But oh no, you are only representing albinism when I have so many stories in this body.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a woman, I am black, I am African, I'm South African, I'm Xhosa, I'm Sotho. All of those are representation. Mm. So when I went there, I'm like, you know, I'm going to take as many people with me as I can.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
And hence we're celebrating it to this very day. Well done. Now, the poetry side?
You know, I don't know when that came out, through which interview. And
yes.
So poetry is a very strange thing because I used to do spoken word poetry.
Okay.
Yes, I used to
slam.
Yeah. And you know, I think like
Pojo Bafo right now is going
And my mother actually feels quite sad with the fact that I actually left poetry, because when I went into the legal profession, I didn't invest in it as much anymore when I was a prosecutor.
Okay.
But I used to do quite a lot of spoken word.
I want us to talk about the lines, how far a parent can go, especially raising a child that is born different. But that is after we play a particular song. What song do you have? I know you've chosen Marvin Gaye. Yes.
Yes, I did choose Marvin Gaye. My father's influence.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Hopper himself.
No, that was my father's influence for sure.
CDs or LPs?
CDs. When we went on a road trip, my father would play this amazing music.
Did you get it at the time, or were you bought stuff?
I think at the time, it was just like, it didn't matter whether we were bought it. It was just the music that was being played.
The order of the day,
And we were going to PE, and we were driving for like 12 hours, and it was just like... And I think as you grow up, it's part of appreciation and memory, because I think that's what these songs have. Partly it's appreciation of the music, but it's the memory and the sentiments attached to it.
Yeah.
So yeah. That explains Marvin Gaye.
Inner City Blue. She lives by the quote by Thomas Sankara, says, I want people to remember me as someone whose life has been helpful to humanity. That is Tando Hopper on my Top 10 at 10. More about her after this.
Hi, Afropolitans. I'm Tando Hopper, and I'm sipping the best tea in the city. Kaya FM 95.9.
Oh, yes. This is Tando Hopper, a woman living with albinism, and she has decided to go sabbatical on a prosecutorial duties.
Mm-hmm.
Would you ever go back?
I don't know.
Is the media, the modeling side taking over so much of your life? But
I think
your worship, I can't see you.
You know, I think there was, I kind of left prosecuting when I felt like I was finished. I can't explain it, you know.
Oh,
and in those 4 years, I was like, you know, my journey here had ended, because when I left it, I wasn't planning on modeling. I didn't actually really think that modeling would take off at all. It wasn't. I just knew, Hor, what's up, I need to take a sabbatical, but it was this overwhelming feeling, Hor, you know, I'm done here.
Yeah.
So I took and I saved up money for like a year before I resigned, and I was like, I'm going to find myself, actually. That's what I said.
Okay.
And even my parents were like, what does that even mean? What does that mean? Like, you know, heaven. Kids of today, finding themselves, you know? Just like, I think it was a premonition or a call out to the universe, because interestingly, I left one kind of career that dealt with representation, and I moved into another career that dealt with representation.
Oh, yes.
And when
I like how you look at that. Yeah. Okay.
I look at it like a lawyer.
I like it. I like that worldview. Yeah.
So, when I actually took my sabbatical, everything started happening serendipitous. So it was really serendipitous, because I think that's when I first got Sundance, and Sundance Directors Lab, and Robert Redford had invited me to be an actress there, and it was a workshop, and I was like, what's going on?
Mm.
And then I did the Audi Untaggable campaign, and everything just started manifesting, Pirelli, calendar, and I was just like, what is going on? But I think the thing is, more than anything, because I would have never thought any of these things would have happened.
Oh, yeah.
But whenever I was in media, I stuck true to the values and the story that I was about. And somehow that story expanded beyond me.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are still more calls.
I think a lot of interesting things are coming.
Tell me.
I want to know. We can't.
Are they embargoed?
Hi. You know that.
You know I hate these embargoes.
That things we cannot speak about.
You can't even hint, Nyana. So, In the country, overseas, where?
Overseas.
Overseas.
Yes.
Paris?
Oh, Banna. No, United States.
But New York!
It's both South African and United States.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I can say, yes.
International.
That is it?
International.
So, yes.
I'm a parent. I'm raising a born different child.
Mm.
And you were that child.
Mm.
You've experienced it. Mm. Now, adult enough to have seen the hand, visible and invisible.
Mm.
What's your advice to me?
I think what we need to help people understand, including our children, is normalcy is a language of culture. Culture decides what's normal and what is abnormal. Nature is diverse. Nature doesn't see any, it won't say the beach sand is white, therefore that's not normal. Mm. It's supposed to be brown. It won't say these roses are white, they're supposed to be red. Mm. Nature in itself is embedded with diversity.
Oh, yeah.
And I think what we need to stop using as a language is the word normalcy. Normalcy is really a figment of our imagination. So I think the one thing that we can kind of try and teach children is to embrace the fact that as human beings, we have to be diverse. This is natural. It's natural to be diverse. It's natural to not be the same. And I think that's the first thing. And also, there's just three words that I use for myself that I've always imparted. I am enough. That is it. You as a human being are enough.
And you have used that as your mantra. You've used that as your core because it was said to you so consistently, right? From home.
Well, not in so many of those words. You know?
Yeah.
But, I think in terms of what it is that they were saying and how it is that they raised me, definitely that is what it basically encapsulated.
Sure. We should have ended this thing when she said normalcy must be removed from our vocab. Because that for me is just the epiphany of everything, of this conversation.
Mm.
What about our education? Because our education and every system that we use uses normalcy, uses average as, a
standardization.
Whether you are an elephant or a monkey or a fish, you are expected by the education system when they say the test is to climb a tree, you're expected to climb a tree.
I think, it's one of the core things that we need to kind of really understand. A lot of the times we talk about diversity, but diversity speaks more of what is. So this person is big, that person is small, that person is dark, that person is light. But inclusiveness is how you interact with that difference. It's not just the fact that it's there. Yes, it's there. It's the difference is there. We acknowledge it. But how do you interact with that difference? And that is inclusiveness. So even with respect to education, how do you interact with the fact that you have children who have special needs? Mm. I went to Wits University and when I went and I said, listen, I've got an issue with eyesight and all of that.
Mm.
They made sure my papers were enlarged. I went and I took a test to see if I need extra time. I was found that I need extra time because I read, I think, I can't remember the seconds, but I read, I don't know how many seconds slower than average. And then they provided facilities to make sure that I can go through my education on the same level as somebody who doesn't have those challenges go through.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That is kind of, that's inclusiveness really. So I think we need to really hone on this term and understand it in our working environment, educational environment, in our media environment. Yeah.
So if you were to redesign this world, if you were to rule this world, let's rephrase that.
Okay? If I ruled the world.
What would you break? What would you keep?
If there's one thing that I think we really misunderstood and we really missed the mark, apart from, because that's a very, it's such a difficult question to answer because we've got power dynamics, historical prejudice, historical marginalization. We have all of these things to deal with that are basically the consequences of what we live right now, and it tells you a lot about our social dynamics right now. But there's something that I think is so redemptive when we're trying to find each other and we're trying to find a better solution to things, and consultation. If we prioritize consultation when we're engaging with one another, then I won't assume it. Something, you know, I won't assume your existence. I won't assume what you need. Yes. I won't assume what your story is. I won't assume what facilities you need. I just think that consultation goes a long way.
Which then speaks against to inclusivity.
Exactly. Right? Because then when you consult, you have to release yourself of the standardization that you're used to.
Yeah.
You have to understand that you're going to have to kind of customize each and every situation. So I think, I would just say there is real benefit in listening to one another through consultation.
Next week, this time, we would have voted. And election time...
I hope we're not going to get too political.
I think I might as well. The challenge about elections, and this is... It becomes the politics of the stomach. It becomes survivalist. And not only that, it becomes also, what's the word I'm looking for? Going for what I know. You know what I mean? Nostalgia. I would like to hear your thoughts on that.
I think I'm not going to answer your question directly. I just think that we are at an age where you have young people who are interacting with media, and I'm really hoping that the information that we have can help us understand what our voting rights, why people fought for voting rights, and how we can influence the outcomes that we want. I think I hear sometimes people just say, well, no, I don't want to vote.
Yes.
I don't see how that helps with anything, because I just think that voting influences outcome and influences behavior. So as long as we appreciate that, we should be fine.
And there's another thing, it's talking about the political and socioeconomic states that we're in. What do you feel about, there's a growing voice that the movement for the girl child is so great and moving forward, however, is leaving behind the boy child.
You know, when I was introduced to feminism, I was introduced to feminism by black feminists like bell hooks, Alice Walker, Toni Morrison.
Oh yeah.
And these women, when they talked about feminism, it wasn't just directed to the female body. It was an end to sexist oppression.
Yes.
That was the term that I was introduced to. Sexist oppression of any kind is an enemy of feminism. That is how I was tutored by black female feminists.
Yes.
You know? So, in other words, we can't have behavior that doesn't, that is oppressive to any kind of sex. The thing about it is that women, or let me say, the female-bodied human, was the most affected by sexist oppression.
Yes, especially during the industrial era.
Yes. And even quite now, I still think... It's still there. But I do think that what you need to look at is not the male body. It is the system that we are both a part of. If patriarchy is the system, then you have to look at how this system behaves in order for us to create a different system that doesn't behave that way.
Yeah.
Because if we remove patriarchy, what do we have? We have to ask ourselves that. Yeah. What do we have? Do we have inclusiveness? What do we have? But we need to know what that system is, because we can't play along the same rules as the system of patriarchy. We can't copy it.
Yeah.
You can't be like, okay, now women are in power, so we have to marginalize men.
And we can't also
work out.
And we can't also correct by being extremist as well. Or?
Extremist how?
Because you know, sometimes when we say something is patriarchal, right?
Yes.
So therefore the extreme of it, or the opposite of it, should be the solution.
Yeah, and it would be, and that's also an interesting thing, is, but what the question would be, what is the opposite of it? Mm. The opposite of it is not that females are at the helm. Mm. Not to me. The opposite of patriarchy is an inclusive system.
Yes.
It's not a system where bodies just change around, but you keep the same system, you know? Mm. So, and that's my view.
And I like it. Thando Hopper, we'll get a tweet from you from New York. To say hello, Afro Politans, I made it and I'm here. All right. I'm listening to you and I feel there's just so much more. There's a layer to you. Layers.
I'm an onion.
Oh yeah. And I don't know how you're gonna peel them, but I'm gonna be looking, watching, with eager and as a fan, as a fellow countryman, as a brother, and I'm hoping to see those layers come through and through and through, and forever and a day. Thank you for being who you are, and thank you for how you were raised, and for you fighting to be and finding your space in the world, because who knows, maybe today would have never happened for you to open our eyes to the world that is, to open our eyes to the diversity that is nature. You know?
Thank you.
And for that, I just want to say, I love it, I embrace it, and I'm challenged, and hopefully from today on I'm even growing, not only as a parent but as a human being. So take on the world, and through you we will shine.
Gale wanted. Thank you.
That is Thando Hopper, guys. Nagia, hi, I'm done.
Hi, Afropolitans. I'm Thando Hopper, and I'm sipping the best tea in the city. Kaya FM 95.9.
The best tea in the city. Weekdays, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Kaya FM 95.9.